You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
So welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Ivy Podcast. Today's episode guest is Dr. Masioli, a distinguished physician who is currently the Chief Quality Officer at Envision Healthcare. Dr. Masioli, it's so great to have you on this podcast.
Well, John, I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to have a conversation with you and your subscribers.
That's excellent. So just for the listeners, a little background I've done. I've actually worked at Envision for quite a few years, a little over 3 years, and that's where Dr. Masioli and I got a chance to work together, and I'm excited to have you on this podcast. Not a lot of our listeners may be closely familiar with the quality program in general, and as a chief quality officer, can you just tell us a little bit more about your role at Envision Healthcare?
Sure. Well, for those of you who don't know, Envision is the largest multi-specialty physician services company in the U.S. We have 19,000 physicians and 6,000 advanced practice professionals touching 35 million patients every year in a variety of specialties, emergency medicine, anesthesiology, radiology, neonatology, and trauma surgery. My role has, as Chief Quality Officer, a variety of very interesting opportunities. One of the first and the most important one is measuring clinical quality in all of our service lines and reporting that data back to the physicians. We look to benchmark ourselves against national quality standards because external benchmarks are always the best, and we do that through specialty quality committees and now dashboards in several of our service lines where physicians can log in and see how they're doing relative to their peers and relative to national benchmarks. We also take a certain cohort of the quality data and report it to the federal government for the quality payments program and to many of our payers where we have payer-embedded contracts. In addition to Envision, I get the chance to oversee a patient safety organization, a CMS-certified registry for data reporting, and very excitingly, clinical research and scientific intelligence, where we're involved in roughly 300 Phase 3 and Phase 4 trials. So Envision has a broad footprint. As Chief Quality Officer, I get to touch a variety of domains. It's a very exciting job.
That's excellent. Definitely. Thank you for providing that clarification. So to take that a little bit further, MIPS program has been under some scrutiny in the public or in the news lately. What's your view of the program and what do you see in the future for that particular initiative?
That is a great and multi-layered question. Let me cut it into a couple parts.
Please do.
The MIPS program has certainly been done under a lot of scrutiny, especially by the physician community. It was designed initially by CMS when House Resolution 2 in 2015 passed the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act. The sustained growth rate formula went away, and in its place, a program that was initially called MIPS, Merit-Based Incentive Payment Programs, was put in place. Physicians were supposed to report on government or qualified clinical data registry measures. There were certain thresholds for data reporting on number of patients, data completeness. And let me say unequivocally, as the Chief Quality Officer Envision, I absolutely support measuring and reporting clinical quality and patient outcomes. The problem with the MIPS program is the government set out one set of rules, and over the last 3 years, the regulatory side of the government has made innumerable changes, and it also left businesses in a bit of a bad position. Lots of investments were made to support this program. Envision is actually the largest single provider of data to CMS for the MIPS program as an enterprise. And then they changed the reporting thresholds and lowered the bar. So a lot of people in Vision, I know other enterprises, made significant investments. And then the reward was cut in half. And it's a little challenging in business when you have a plan and you make investments and you're told the reward will be X or the penalty will be Y, and the penalty stays the same, but the reward gets halved. I think the scrutiny comes from the changing of the rules, the sunsetting of measures, and the very challenging mechanism to introduce new measures in a variety of specialties. Anesthesiologists especially is particularly disenfranchised with the number of measures. Emergency medicine suffers from a similar burden. Again, I think the physician community supports quality measurement, and I think it absolutely should be public and transparent. But it's hard to play a fair game when the rules are changed almost on an every 6-month basis. You feel like you're always chasing the rabbit and never cooking it.
Yeah, and I can definitely relate to that as far as, you know, the continuous changes as being part of the program under your leadership. That was definitely a very challenging learning experience. So that was great.
Yeah, created a lot of problems for the IT folks. In terms of the second part of your question, John, was the future of the program. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt that the entire country, not just government payers, but the private payers, are going to shift to more value-based care. Now, value-based care, if you go to a room of 100 physicians and hospital administrators and ask what's the definition of value-based care, you'll probably get 103 answers. But regardless of how you interpreted the name value-based care, quality reporting program like MIPS are going to continue to grow and be present in the future. Hopefully the reporting requirements will become more fixed and less arbitrary with changes. But I can't, quality reporting is there and is only going to become more robust. I think the MIPS program will undergo some more changes. And while I just complained about all the changes, I'd like to see some permanent and things that resonate with physicians. One of the other real complaints about the program is a lot of the measures have been process-based, and no one who's practiced medicine, I practiced critical care and anesthesia for 30 years, no one who's practiced medicine really believes that process measures are a good surrogate of clinical care. It's really more about outcomes. And then for physicians, it's how is severity adjustment done, because certainly those who treat individuals in the inner city of Chicago have a much sicker patient baseline population than those who are treating people in the upscale sections of Miami, say. So we've got to get to more permanent outcome-based measures with good severity of illness scoring adjustments.
And that's great, and thank you for clarifying that. So to take this a little bit further, which improvements in healthcare are you mostly excited about that would hopefully improve the overall patient care?
Well, you know, another great question. That kind of leads into my last comment. We're beginning to see a real move towards what is called PROM, P-R-O-M, patient-reported outcome measures. And I think this is really obviously what the patients want, but I think it's what the clinicians want. Let's take orthopedic surgery. Let's take hip surgery. You either have a general or a spinal anesthetic. You know, you're done as an inpatient or an outpatient. What we don't have any good longitudinal data at 3, 6, 9, and 12 months out, which venue and which intervention gave the patients the best outcome. And I think going to longitudinal patient-reported outcome measures is really the improvement that I see happening that I am most excited about. It's very easy for us in the clinical environment to do an intervention, look 24 hours later and say, that's a good outcome. And it is a good outcome in that narrow time frame, but seeing what we do and how it impacts the quality of people's lives and their activities of daily living and their interactions with their families and their spouses and their children, their grandchildren, that's what really excites me. And coupled with that, biometric devices, I mean, so many people have, they have an Apple Watch or a Fitbit or an Android Watch or many of the other players in the space. They're counting their steps, they're watching their heart rate, they're looking at their flights of stairs. I think all that data, at some point in time, those in the IT universe who are leaders like yourself are going to find ways for those wearable biometric devices to stream into the patient records and really give us a more complete snapshot of people's health and lives, and coupled with patient-reported outcomes, I think we're really going to see a change in how people live. As we have a greater increasing percentage of an older patient population, really knowing their functionality and letting people live meaningful lives as they age, that's what really excites me, and I think those are great improvements that are coming.
Yeah, those definitely seem like a very exciting initiatives in place that hopefully lead to some improvements in the overall healthcare. Patient safety, it's at the core of quality care delivery system. So for those who are not closely familiar with the PSO, patient safety in general, can you please elaborate on what purpose does the patient safety serve and what needs to be in place for an effective patient safety program?
Love to. So back in 2005, the federal government passed what was called the Patient Safety and Quality Improvement Act. And what this did is this allowed an agency called AHRQ, A-H-R-Q, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, to certify organizations as PSOs or patient safety organizations. We have an ARC certified PSO and Envision. And the purpose of a PSO, it allows you in a legally secure and privileged and confidential environment to conduct activities to improve the safety and quality of patient care. And these organizations, take ours for example, our clinicians and our healthcare facility partners voluntarily report and aggregate and analyze data. And it's not just outcome data, it's near misses. It's, did you pick up a vial of, say, neostigmine when you went to meant to pick up a vial of Narcan that was caught at the last minute? Why did that happen? Was it a labeling error? What happens with certain outcomes? And so when we can aggregate that data across state lines and institutions, it allows us to use data mining tools to find where bad outcomes potentially occur, analyze them, and then make interventions to improve the safety and quality. It's probably one of the best things that the federal government ever did for healthcare, and in my opinion, in our own PSO, we aggregate data, we do peer review, we publish white papers, all with the goal of improving the quality and patient safety, not just of our patients, but of everyone's patients. PSOs have to share their findings, not just within their own institution or company like Envision, but make them broadly available to the public. So you've got, you know, about 100 or so, I think, PSOs certified in the U.S., all putting out a variety of valuable information, and that gets spread across the whole ecosystem. And, you know, a rising tide raises all boats, and, you know, what boat is more important than patient care and patient safety?
Absolutely. Very interesting, and thank you for clarifying all of that. You've mentioned a few, briefly touched upon some of the projects and initiatives in place at Envision. To the extent that you can share, so what are the most innovative programs that you have underway under your leadership at Envision that aim to improve and evolve the healthcare delivery system?
Envision has a variety of programs, but if I could highlight three of them, in our emergency medicine space, one of my colleagues, Dr. Becky Parker, is leading an initiative, ALTO, Alternative to Opioids, in our emergency departments. For many patients, the emergency department is the first place where they come into contact with opioids, and we know a certain number of people will develop opioid use disorder and become addicted, and that clearly is not the outcome we want. So we're aggressively prosecuting a strategy to minimize the use of opioids. That's a great innovation I'm excited about. In our radiology space, despite being distributed all across the country, we're going to a unified quality reviewing platform for all of our clinicians to do peer review on one another. We're doing an over 3% sample rate on 10 million radiology reads. The standard is 1%, and we're finding that great information to continue to improve quality where small errors occur. One of the things about such a large company with 35 million patient contacts is our denominators are so big that those rare events or infrequent events, we have a chance to look at more of those than most groups do. So we have an opportunity to make greater improvement. And then lastly, I would say our anesthesiology space, my colleague Joshua Bloomstone has been spearheading a program for early recovery after surgery. This is a program, if you go back 20 years ago, if you had a gallbladder taken out or something, you came into the hospital, you laid around for 3 days. After your surgery, you laid around for 3 days. You got deconditioned and didn't do well. With early recovery after surgery, people are eating and drinking up till a few hours before their procedures now. And within an hour or two of their procedures, they're up and ambulating. And we're finding that complications go down, like the stays go down. Return to work improves earlier. Overall quality of life improves earlier. So these are exciting things. And again, when you have a company like ours, we have the privilege of treating 35 million patients. We're in a unique position to kind of bend the curve of outcomes ourselves just by the sheer volume of care that we provide. So I can go on and on about initiatives, but I would say those three are the ones that I think are the most exciting in our company right now.
Yeah, those definitely are exciting initiatives, and thank you for sharing. As far as getting innovative and you know, transforming programs like that delivered and implemented, obviously you need a very strong leadership team. So curious, as far as any strategies that you may have deployed as part of, you know, your organization that allowed you to attract some top talent that help you achieve some of these objectives?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. Talent acquisition, I think in your space, in my space, I'm sure in all your listeners' spaces, right? That's kind of the secret sauce. How do you get the best people? You know, I love everybody's profiles on LinkedIn. I love resumes and I love curriculum vitas. But for me, it really comes down to the interview. Degrees are nice, pedigrees are nice, but I really look for two things. I look for passion and creativity. If someone's passionate about the work we're doing and in quality of care and patient outcomes, and they show me a creative project they've done, I believe most people are innately smart, and if they work hard, they can pick up someone might not have a skill that I think is required for a job, but if they show me a lot of passion and creativity, I believe that they can, you know, learn that, especially if they're nurtured and mentored. And for me, it really comes down to just, are they excited about the work? Do I sense a genuine bit of enthusiasm? Do they have creativity? Einstein's got a great quote that I'll summarize that basically says, the level of thinking that got us to the problems we have is not the level of thinking that'll help us solve the problems we're in. And that's why I really like creative people. People say, think outside the box, this or that. Those are kind of trite terms. To me, it's about creativity. You know, do you have passion and are you creative? And when someone's got that, one of my top people is a guy named Paul Salmon. his background in life, is he started life as an oceanographer of all things. And, you know, the guy's a whiz with managing teams and IT and data infrastructure and running programs. And if you look at him on paper, his background, he was an oceanographer. I mean, so, but he's passionate and he's creative. I mean, those to me are that's the secret sauce.
Very happy you mentioned Paul Salmon. So for the listeners, he was actually my boss for quite some time at Envision, and I can definitely relate to what you're talking about. But I did not know about his background in oceanography. That's yeah. Something new I learned today. So obviously, for you to, you know, to have so much knowledge and to stay on top of all of the changes and improvements in your space, you must read a lot. Curious, what are the top two or three books that you like to always recommend to others and why?
Boy, that's a really great question. I'm a voracious reader. I think my kids would tell you that I'm a book with legs. I always have either a hard book or my Kindle in my hand. I think Jeff Bezos should be sending me a personal card for all the books I buy. But books I really like. I'm a huge Peter Drucker fan. I think he saw management and utilizing human capital as well as anybody ever did in terms of systems and processes. I think the book The Essential Drucker, which takes 60 years of his writings down to a few hundred pages of essays, is a book that I absolutely love. I'm also a huge fan of someone who I imagine your listeners know well, Warren Bennis, who he's, you know, a little long in tooth now, but he was started the first leadership institute really in the country at USC, and he's taught at Harvard, the Kennedy School of Government. He's been a visiting lecturer all over the world. The Essential Warren Bennis just talks about leadership and management. While Drucker really focused on systems and processes and putting human capital into it, Bennis really talked about how do you manage those people and lead them so that they get their best out of themselves. Because when they get their best out of themselves, you get the best out of them. And I guess if you were going to give me three, Principles by Ray Dalio. I'm just a huge Ray Dalio fan. I think the innovative feedback system for decision making he set up at the Bridgewater Capital is amazing. I'm not sure it could be replicated a lot of places, but I love his book. I love his podcasts. I've read the book cover to cover a few times, and I learned something every time I read it. So I guess I'm just going to keep rereading it until I figure it all out, or if I ever can. But those would be my top three books.
Those are some great books, and I appreciate you sharing that. For the listeners, we'll make the titles and the links to the books available in the episode notes. Dr. Masioli, can't thank you enough for finding time to talk to us on the Ivy Podcast today. I know how busy you are transforming the healthcare system in America. So I really appreciate it, and I hope that we can catch up in a couple of years on this podcast as well to see all of the improvements that you have made.
That'd be great. John, thanks again for the invitation. Wonderful to talk with you. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.